Well, hello there, podcast listeners. It's Anna, David, how are you? You are listening to the After Party Pod. That gorgeous theme song you heard came courtesy of Seth Rothschild. He's very fancy, Rothschild. Maybe you want to follow him on Twitter. He's an incredibly talented musician, and faithful listeners will note that at the end, stick around for the end. You can't stop this podcast before the end because we now have an instrumental version of the song. That's right. If you want to follow Seth on Twitter, it's at Seth Rothschild, R-O-T-H-S, child, like a kid. What else do I want to tell you? I want to tell you about our guest this week, a very talented guy named Craig Shoemaker, not Schumacher, which you might want to say for reasons I can't explain, but he is a very successful stand-up comedian who has been sober for decades and decades, and he has done a lot in his storied career. He's been named Comedian of the Year and Funniest Male Stand-Up Comic by various and sundry organizations and institutions. He's been in Scream 2. He's had Comedy Central specials. He's won Emmy Awards. He even has an honorary doctorate in humanities. I'm not even done. He's been on Parks and Recreation, and he's been on The Bold and the Beautiful. He's published children's books. I'm still listing things. And he has a hit podcast called Laugh It Off, which is on the Toad Hop Network. And he is somebody who is very serious about transforming dysfunction into function, or sort of surviving a lot, quite frankly, and thriving. And he really is an impressive guy and a funny guy. Those things don't always come in combination. So you are about to hear it all. He does energy work. What that means is that he can work with you, whether you don't even have to be in LA. He can do it over Skype, and he helps people work through stuff. Spoiler alert, I think I might have asked him in our interview to do energy work on me, and then I think sort of I might have chickened out when waiting for a response. I'm not sure. I don't always understand my subconscious or my conscious, but maybe you guys do. Maybe you guys can tell me what happened. Either way, I hope and trust you will enjoy this interview with Craig Shoemaker. So, Craig, here we go.
All right.
How are you?
I'm fantastic.
We were already having a pretty decent conversation before the microphone.
We have a thing on our podcast called SIFTA, Save It For The Air.
Right,
and we
right.
should have done that. We shouldn't have even spoken one word.
All our good shit is out.
It's gone. Good night. Thank you.
Well, you disproved the theory that, you know how, I always reference this, but you know, in Truth or Dare, when Madonna's like, what's the point of doing anything if it's not on camera? A comedian, what's the point of talking if you don't have a microphone?
I know. I kept looking at your microphone going, turn that on.
What's wrong with this girl?
Yeah, how come she's not turning this on right now?
But you handled it. You spoke like, you know, you gave me some funny stuff.
Yeah, and some advice.
Advice.
Typical for an addict.
Yes. And then I was sort of defiant about the advice, typical for an addict.
Right.
And we realized we have the same sobriety date, but not year.
That is true. So we're going to be taking cakes together from now on.
Yeah, okay. So you give me mine, I'll give you yours.
So in other words, both of us also did it in a ridiculously addictive way. We both got clean and sober at Thanksgiving and Christmas on the rise.
Right.
The whole holiday season, we kick it off with sobriety, which was like, I remember those first 90 days were a nightmare. And I kept going, what is wrong with you? Why can't you do it like everyone else?
January 1st.
Or the 2nd, right? The first, you're still hungover and everything. But no, we had to do it like that.
Well, that's, okay, mine was different because I got sober May 2nd of 2000.
Okay.
And then I was all into it, super into it, but like didn't quite buy into the fact that drug addicts and alcoholics were the same thing.
Okay, so you kept recreationally doing that.
No, I was into it.
Okay.
And buying into this notion that they were all the same thing. And on November 18th, it occurred to me that they were not at all the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And that I was a cocaine addict. I was not an alcoholic. I didn't even like drinking. And I went out that night.
On a bender.
And I had two bottles of wine, 4.5 hits of ecstasy, and said,
nice. Oh,
okay, alcohol's a gateway drug. And then, and so then it was like a year sober when I realized No, I've always just been alcoholic.
Right. It's all encompassing. I say everything from the neck up.
So, okay. So that was my experience. What was yours?
Yeah. I had something similar. I was sober in March of 87. And I couldn't quite get it. When I speak, I talk about this, I did the reverse program.
Uh-huh.
For the, like this dyslexic version.
What's that?
I started in with the 13th step is a girl I was sleeping with took me to my first meeting.
Right. I don't know if that counts as, that's a very creative 13.
Okay, I know. I'm creative. I'm in the creative arts. So I'm gonna do things a little different.
Right, and
including the way I worked the program. Then I started with 12. The minute I went to my first meeting, I went back to Philadelphia and said, "You're all alcoholics.
Right.
Follow me to the promised land. I have found sobriety."
People love that shit.
You know what? 25 years later, they're still there with me. Not a one. Not a single one.
What the fuck is wrong with him?
I know.
He's lost it.
As a matter of fact, that's when I went out was... I went back to Philadelphia where everything had been created in my life, including my... My whole identity was, there was stuff called the shoe zone, you know, the Twilight Zone. That means you get sucked into the shoe zone, take your own car, because
what
you are going to be, because I would take my car, and then I knew all the after hours, Velvet Rope people in Philadelphia, and that meant you're hitchhiking home from Alaska,
because
something's going to go down. Yeah,
right.
You're sucked into the shoe zone, and what's really weird is I'm still friends with my buddies from kindergarten, third grade, and everything in Philly.
Cool.
And to this day, they will take a separate car. I'm not getting sucked in the shoe zone.
Like,
I go, I'm sober,
now.
You
right,
idiot.
Right.
We're not going to go out that late. Or wait, we might, but we're just going to laugh this time. That's
right.
Our high.
And you might drive them home.
And I will definitely drive them home. I'm always the designated driver now, which is ironic that the shoe zone of all people.
The driver.
Yeah, and I love that these things were named after me. And also Craigan. That means if you're really stoned and you're in that catatonic state, they go, "Look, he's Craigan." And you sort of hear them and you're aware that they're there, but you're also just off in your own world. That's called Craigan.
Can we talk about that state for a minute? Because I hate that state.
Oh, I hated it too, but I kept doing it thinking the next one would be good.
Right. That's why I always hated pot though. Like,
yeah.
One hit and I would be insane.
Yeah.
And be like,
paranoid.
My paranoia, I think our true paranoia has come out. Mine was fixated on one thing. It was... nobody understands anything I'm saying, and they all think I'm insane.
Yeah.
That was yours too.
Well, I thought that. I also thought they were going to hurt me. I added that to it.
See,
you're a female. That probably didn't happen as much.
Right.
Hanging out with the guys, you're going to get some bong hits. I mean, I'm talking about hit you with a bong,
especially
in Philadelphia, or bong water, or something's going to happen that's not good.
So this was a reasonable paranoia, you're saying?
Well, yeah. So it was based on experience, strength, and hope, or not no hope. But I mean, they kept going with it. I mean, it was like, you know, are you feeling all boxed in? They would do that one with you.
Yeah, no, my friends would fuck with me, too.
They did
high
that.
School. And it was like, yeah, I remember having this so-called friend who would do this thing where you can't see it on the recording, but she would like be like, look at me and like make a crazy face.
Yeah.
Knowing I was so high.
Knowing I was going to freak you out.
And then she'd be like, "What?"
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God, how could you do that to a person?
My friends, they did that on a regular basis. And then if you would get in that catatonic state.
Yeah.
When you're just like freaking out, or sometimes you're in a little bit of euphoria.
No, I always skipped that part.
Well, yeah, I know. But it was sort of like, you know, when you're way, way gone and you're just, that was called Craigan. And what was great about it was other people could be Craigan.
Right.
That was really cool. I was like, "Hey, he's Craigan. That's named after me."
A catatonic state was named after me.
This is how it's
going
to be.
Who can say that?
This was my fame. This is where my fame was going to exist at one point. If I didn't get clean and sober, I'd still be just the shoe zone. There'd be no Emmys and everything else.
Maybe they can still pass that along even though you're sober. They can teach it to their kids.
But yeah, you want to be Craigan. No, I don't want anybody to ever be Craigan.
Let's call Craigan, let's rename it.
And the shoe zone, that's another one.
Yeah.
You know, but I went back to Philadelphia it was actually November 18th also,
look
the same
that.
As you.
Right, but 87 or what year?
This is 87,
right.
And then I had been sober, and they said, "Where's the old shoe?" You know, that's my nickname in Philadelphia.
Right.
In Philadelphia, that's where they shorten your name.
Yeah, okay.
Immediately, that's your nickname. It's Shoemaker's Shoe, Cerami is Ceram, Steve Wartenberg is Wart. I mean, Scott Astor wasn't fond of this method, but he dealt with it.
Right.
Tony Puccini had to move. But anyway, we you know, "Where's the shoe? Where's the..." They were used to... I'm the lampshade on the head. I'm the life of the party. And they were saying, basically, "We missed the old shoe because, you know..." I still wasn't really firm in what... on the fun that could happen in sobriety. Right. I wasn't really clear with it. And I had no sober friends.
Right.
Zero.
Right.
None were following me to the promised land.
Right.
So I was like, I'll show you. My sister also, we all went out. My sister's a drunk. And I took the microphone over of a band, and I just started doing all the shoe stuff that I ever did. Now I'm drinking. I'm back.
Right.
And what was really funny to see their eyes, I still recall their eyes going, whoa, 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 shoe to that point, not to the point you're about to go to. Because enough, there we are at the Black Banana after hours bar.
Right.
You know, I'm hitting up the Coke dealer, the old Coke. Hey, how you been? I'm back from L.A. Come on, baby. Let's have some of that Philly Coke. I miss it.
Right.
And now we're hitchhiking home. You know, it's and it was on. I woke up the next morning with literally a box spring of, you know, a sofa bed. Mm-hmm. It was poking me in the ass next to a naked woman in my sister's apartment. And that's when I was sprung into sobriety.
That sounds so awful. So you woke up.
I still remember who was next to me. At least she was female and pretty decent looking.
Right. Could be something.
And of course I was nude. I always was nude. Nude is always a part of my story.
Oh, but you just took your clothes off.
Always.
Not at the bar with the...
Oh, always. No, I had my clothes off. I went through a fountain one time.
Right.
I wasn't even drunk that day. I just did it to do it for a dare. Me and my
that
comedy
was like
buddies.
Yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I was in Florida. We just... take your clothes off. That was my dare, was you be naked. You have to do one lap in this fountain.
You're like, that's a dare? That's a Sunday morning.
That was, yeah, and I'll collect some money on the way, just like I did when I was a kid. So I got in there, I did the breaststroke, and I look good.
So, have you been arrested for your nudity?
Yeah, I've been taken in sometime. We used to streak a lot. I was really big, and, you know. One time we were really stoned, and when we were stoned, we would create things. By the way, I had the fort. I always had this converted garage. It was called the Dungeon.
Right.
And it was called the Dungeon Gang, also named after me.
Okay, was this parents' home?
I only had a mom, and my dad left when I was born.
Right.
Something
right.
I said. Wah. But he was gone. But right. Anyway, I was with my mom. We used to get evicted all the time.
Right.
But I used to think the word evict meant move. Like they were the same
right,
word.
Right.
Mom, here's the eviction truck. And we would go again. But there's one place on Highland Avenue outside of Philadelphia. And we had this converted garage. I converted it into this thing. It was like a shrine to beer. We had these pyramids of every beer from all over the world. I was so proud of myself.
For a teenager, that's a dream.
Oh, 15
true.
Years old.
Yeah.
And it was like bowing in a temple.
Right.
You got the new Lowenbrow. I mean, whoa.
Right.
I can tell you all the songs. Schaefer is the one beer to have when you're having more than one. These are the songs that I know, by the way.
So these are songs you guys made up? These were commercials?
No, these are commercials.
Okay.
I live for
and you would sing the commercials in the fort.
Could it be Lowenbrow?
Oh, I remember that one.
Could it be? We knew all the commercials, but we had every beer from all over.
And
we
your mom was just cool with this?
My mom would go to the door. And no further.
Right.
She didn't want to know what was going on. As a matter of fact, one of the quotes my mom would have was, she would go, you hear this, right? Craig, I smell grass. And my friends would go, it's your old lady, man. It's your old lady. We didn't care because we knew she wasn't going to do anything to
me.
And she didn't want to come in.
Right.
So she'd go, I smell grass. And then we had this, extension cords all put together, and they were like duct taped, like, you know, Cheech and Chong electricians did this number. I ran them under the ground, into the basement, into a light socket, through water and everything. I don't know how we lived.
Right.
And this was the Dungeon. And we were the only gang with shelter because we were 24/7 with the Dungeon.
Right.
And we would just come up with plans in there, like, what are we going to do? So we get stoned, we get drunk, and one day, we used to, like, make fun of people, each other. It was terrible. I mean, just rip on each other. But one day we decided, let's walk up to people's doors and make fun of them. Okay? And then I have to add, while we're nude.
Oh, my God.
So we're going to make fun of them while we're nude. Meanwhile, I have no package whatsoever at that time. I hadn't hit puberty. I have a wall switch.
Right.
That's what I'm rocking, a wall switch for a crotch. And we did it. We, the three of us, we also had this thing that we came up with when we were stoned. That was when you were doing something really bad. We thought that was going to catch on, like, what's up? We thought that this was going to be, it may be after being on your podcast.
Yeah, seriously. Live
stream. Can you try it now?
Listeners, Let me see it. Heard it here. Oh, me?
Yeah,
do I have to do
of course,
it?
Yes.
Do I have to make that?
We used to have girls do. You don't have to do the face. I have an expression face, but go ahead.
I don't know. Okay, hold on.
Go on. Not bad.
Not bad. I went a little higher.
But you're a woman. You're supposed to go higher.
It's hard to do. I mean, I'm not saying it can't take off.
We thought this was going to be the thing, and.
You don't really make money off of things like that.
You do. The guys from WhatsApp, they made money on the Budweiser commercials.
Okay,
we thought
okay.
We would do Schaefer.
Right.
You know, commercials.
I like that you were so entrepreneurial.
We
in
were.
Your fucked-upness. I mean, you really were.
You don't even know. You don't even know. We can get into that whole thing. I still remain entrepreneurial.
Right.
Or whacked, however you want to look at it. But there's nothing that I'll stop it. So then we would walk up to the door, like, and then Cerami's the getaway car. Me, George, and Tommy get out. We're fully naked.
Right.
All our clothes are in Cerami's car. And we knock on the door. And we had a whole rehearsed thing. Like,
right.
You say this when they answer. I'll say this. You know, like it was a whole script.
Right.
And then she opens up the door, this real rich neighborhood. And we freeze. No one says anything.
Right.
And she just goes, ah! And then all of a sudden I start doing my penis helicopter, which was always a classic, you know, make my penis go around.
And what was she doing?
She's screaming. And I'm just going.
Oh my God.
And George is making fun of her. Look at that bird's nest on your head. Then we ran because she starts calling for her husband.
Yeah.
Cerami takes off in the getaway car.
Nice.
But he's doing the same miles an hour as we're running naked, and we're going, come on, man, it's not funny. It's not funny. Stop. He's here. So we jumped. I jumped in the car. George gets on the hood of the car, and we took him for the ride of his life.
Naked.
And then it wasn't funny. He looks in. He said, please stop. I'll rip this wiper off. And then Cerami turns it on. You asshole. It's like tossing him around on the hood. We drove through the basketball courts. And then finally, I'll never forget this line. I'm howling in the backseat. He looks, he's like disheveled. He's looking in the windshield. He goes, please let me in. I'm going to get caught. I won't get the Naval Academy. He's thinking of higher education. He's stone
right.
Drunk and nude on the hood
of
a car.
A man concerned about his future, no matter what, George.
George the megaphone.
Did he make it to the Naval Academy?
He never made it to that.
Because of that nude car ride.
Actually, he remained a drunk.
Really?
He did remain a drunk.
Did
yes.
Did the other gang members all keep drinking?
Yeah, they all do. And I still hang out with them. As a matter of fact, I organize the trip. Even though I live in LA, we go away every year.
Wow.
Once a year, we find a place and we hee it up. You know, and
you bring the families and everything.
No,
just the boys.
Yeah. It's just. I mean, we had new laughs this year. I went to a steakhouse in shorts, and the guy had to take me away. So I'm still
the new zone. The new crazy.
Yeah, that's the new
shorts.
Crazy. I wore shorts and a t-shirt, and they had to go dress me in this beautiful steakhouse in Tampa. They put a suit jacket on me, and my friends are howling, laughing.
But I have a question because I feel like I think it would be really hard to hang out with a bunch of drunks.
No.
No.
Not.
And I think people think that. I think people assume
they
if they get sober, well, that's it. Like, you got to hang out with sober people only and that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, listen, when I first got sober, look at the business I'm in. You haven't even mentioned that. I'm a stand-up comedian for 30-some years.
Rife with addiction.
Well, not only that. I mean, yeah, I look at the walls of the Atlanta Punchline, for instance, all these 8x10s of people that I worked with, and it's like dead, where
right.
The hell's he? Probably drunk, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's unbelievable the list of people that have died from this addiction in the stand-up business. But we're fed free everything
right.
Every day.
Right.
We
right.
Could have free booze,
right.
Free drugs,
right.
You know, or almost. Hey, I'll get you tickets to my show, you know.
Right.
We used to be paid, they'd say, you want white or green?
I never heard that.
You want white or green? And we go, how about half and half?
But not literally, like, instead of money.
Oh, yeah. We'd be paid.
Okay,
in
so
coke
how much would you get? You'd get like a gram or an ounce?
No, it was more than that. You know.
Oh, yeah, your comedy's good.
I'm a big comedian.
Yeah.
You know?
I apologize, but
yeah, one of the guys paid me, and this was the first time I did free base. We free base.
That guy's not fucking around.
I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but
yeah,
he showed up in the room. I didn't even know what it was, and he showed up in the room with a torch and a giant mirror and these chemicals.
And you did it?
Well, of course I I did it. So I did you, anything.
Okay, so
I
you,
did anything.
So that was your thing. You were like
anything. Garbage
with the,
can.
With the boys, it was drinking and pot, and then you graduated.
Yeah.
So then you came to LA.
Literally, I graduated high school. Yeah. Right to coke and lewds, acid.
Oh yeah, I missed the Quaaludes thing.
You missed it. Well, we had that down the street. Actually, we knew Peter Rohrer. It was Rohrer 714s. That was in Philly.
Okay, I don't know. I'm sorry. My ignorance.
They're called Rohrer.
That was
that's
the
chemical company. Rohrer 714. And those were the type of lewds that you took. And
apparently, those were Quaaludes were amazing.
Well, yeah, amazingly, you know, threw me into another loop, a whole other
right.
type of loop. Everything always just heightened my paranoia, except for booze. That was
right.
the only thing that didn't heighten my paranoia.
Right.
That just took me into another place of just craziness. But it all just served the purpose of take me out of this body
right.
and put me in another one.
And so talk to me about that. So why do you think, you were just born an alcoholic, an addict, or
you know,
you were trying to escape, you know, pain, or?
It's a theoretical thing, and I've thought about it through all these years of sobriety, and you know what, I just treat it like, you know, I act as if, you know, like, let's say there's people that do more,
mm-hmm.
more than I did,
mm-hmm.
and I could tell stories where people go, oh my God, I would never go that far, and I tell other stories to other people, and they go, that
it's
was nothing,
yeah.
you know, I spilled more than you drank, you
right,
know, that kind
right,
of thing,
right.
It doesn't matter, what matters is, you know, we all, it's a self-diagnosed disease. And even if it is a disease, I don't know if it's a disease. I don't know these things for sure.
Right.
I do know this. I do know that if I stayed on that path, most likely I would not only not be here alive, but I definitely would not have the success that I have.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to embrace it. I wouldn't be able to further my consciousness.
Right.
And it all led to that. This was the base for that.
Right.
So if I had to even fake it that I'm an alcoholic,
right,
this
right.
is such a better way to live.
Fuck yeah.
It is. What's that?
I keep saying fuck. I think it's like I'm around a comedian. I'm just going to keep saying fuck. I have no idea. I've never said it as much as I've said it.
Really? I'm purposely not, just in case you broadcast this.
Well,
I've been trained in not saying it.
Well, this
which
is the
really
podcast
weird.
Land.
I know, but I'm not going to do it. I refuse to do it.
Right, right.
Because I really want to, first of all, you know, you in the podcast land, it could lead to radio land.
True.
And the second that they hear that, a radio station not going to hire.
It's over for
yeah,
me,
yeah.
is what you're
not
saying.
That you were going to go down that road.
Well, don't curse me. Maybe I could.
Okay, Miss Radio Potty Mouth.
Do you want to know something interesting? Like,
yeah.
I went to a life coach a few years ago in New York.
Yeah.
And he was this very revered Israeli life coach.
Uh-huh.
And he said to me, your life is going to be profoundly better if you do stop doing three things. Stop complaining, gossiping, and swearing.
Wow.
And I was like, I understood the gossiping and complaining thing because that's sort of like, you know,
yeah.
sobriety. We try not to do those things. But the swearing thing, I was so like, that's ridiculous. How is that going to make me happier? And so I committed to trying to do it. And the crazy thing is it was so easy. I immediately just stopped swearing.
Yeah.
And I started, whenever someone swore, it felt like they were punching me in the face. It felt
wow.
like the most aggressive act.
But now you're back punching people.
Yeah, why not? Because it feels very benign when you're doing it, you know?
Yeah, it's a strange thing. I swear on stage,
mm-hmm.
and yet I'm hired corporately to not swear.
Right, so you know how
not
to,
one. And I do know how to do it.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely, there's no question. Well, I have different feelings about it. First of all, I think it's the most harmless thing ever.
Right.
I mean, I talk about this. I say, you know, you watch the news. And, you know, comedians, we're literally the court jesters of today.
Right.
And with so little respect for comedians. And we're the first ones that people come down on if you say something controversial or drop an F-bomb. I say, what's worse, the news you're talking about real bombing of real people
right.
or me dropping an F-bomb?
Right.
What's going to send a kid to a top of a tower with a rifle?
Right.
Craig Shoemaker said F on The Tonight Show.
Right. right.
No, it's because they're desensitized by the stuff that we do mindlessly
right.
accept. And you think about it, I mean, you know, if I called you a fnufna, right?
Mm-hmm.
A fnufna,
mm-hmm.
right? You're a fnufna. That could be the worst thing I could call you in my language.
Right.
It's all intent. It
I
doesn't
know.
Matter.
I know.
It doesn't matter. If I have to, so I have kids.
That's what
I was regard.
I,
a lot of things have to go through that prism now.
Right.
My child, if he says to me that he saw on a talk show or news, if he turns to me and says he's really little, he's going to be more destroyed on, Daddy, what does rape mean?
Right.
Than, Daddy, you know, that guy cursed.
Right.
By the way, my son charges me $1 a dollar a curse.
Oh, really?
So that'll stop you too.
Right, right, right.
If you were around him today, you would already owe him $23.
I somehow fall into this. He gets to charge anybody who comes in his path.
Oh, no question. It's hysterical. People he just meets.
Right, right.
And you know, a lot of adults are like oblivious to kids if they don't have kids.
Right.
So he'll be like in a back seat, not even heard from, and I'll be in the front seat with some guy who's just meeting him. He's
right.
Cursing up a storm. He's back there going, dollar! Does and the guy's looking at him going, who are you?
The guy pays.
I'd say half the people pay. Some of
he's
my cheap friends, there's no way.
Have a serious like lot of money.
He better, because it ain't gonna come from me. His mother took it all.
Okay, wait. So you were on such a good path, and then I sidetracked you with all this cussing.
There's a lot of sidetracks. That's okay. That's the way I roll.
So okay, and so you were drinking, you were doing drugs, you were out here. You came out to LA. What year?
Oh, I came out in '86. Funny drunk story about that.
Only
I came
lasted
out
a year.
Yeah, I came out thinking that this was like, oh my god, I'll really be able to do cocaine.
Right.
Easily.
LA.
And so I get invited to a place called Vertigo with my buddy I went to Temple with and back in Philly.
By the way, yeah. Tom Sizemore, Temple graduate.
Also Temple. That's
yep.
exactly right.
Yep.
And Hall & Oates and Bob Saget and Bill Cosby. A lot of people went to Temple. This guy's a big publicist, so he gets us invited. So you have to understand, I'm like this poor kid from Philadelphia.
Right.
Oh, my God, here we are. And we get in, we have dinner with the owner of Vertigo, which is the popular club. I mean, at the time, tell you how long ago it was, Brigitte Nielsen was there, you know, with Eddie Murphy.
And yeah.
Like, this was like the place to go. And I whip out the Coke on the table. And he says, we better not do it on the table. I go, come on, it's L.A., baby. And
right.
He had been here already a couple of years. He goes, no, we went in the bathroom. And
yeah.
We go into the bathroom in the stall. And then, boom, they bust in. And they go, that's it for you guys. And they take us out by the scruff of our neck like I'm a dog, you know, with like a basset hound.
Right, right, right.
So here are the same people I passed on the way in, like, ha, 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 velvet rope people. They now literally kicked me in the ass. They said, these guys are out of here. And the guy took a foot to my ass. And that was my intro to L.A.
But that's actually insane. In 1986... I would think that cocaine was flowing from, you know, the faucets
well,
in the bathroom.
You would think that, and I thought that too.
You
That's
were wrong.
What makes both of us ignoramuses.
Well, that was just bad luck. More
no, it wasn't. It wasn't the case.
Okay.
We thought that it was because
okay.
You and I watched the movies,
right.
And we're going, hey, you know, it's Scarface time. You know,
right.
Say hello to my little friend. I mean, I'm going, this is great. I'm going to have freedom to do all the drugs I want in L.A. And when I moved, because Philly's more, you know, beer and lose.
Right.
I'm like, this is fantastic for cocaine, but it wasn't the case.
So you arguably got your big wake-up call the first night you went out in L.A.
It was one of the first nights I went out in L.A., and it went from, like, I went from the top to the very bottom.
In like an hour,
exactly. That's all it took me. I had dinner with the owner and everything,
and my
buddy, who was not an addict, even though he was doing it with me,
right.
He responded a completely different way. As they're grabbing me by the neck, I'm going, hey, get off of me. I'm starting a Philly fight with him. And he's, he's like real effeminate too. He goes, just keep walking, keep walking. And he wouldn't look up because he was humiliated. We still talk about it.
Right,
he's still
buddy
of mine. But
right. Yeah,
I mean, it's just your perspective is different once you're, you know, once you do move to L.A. I mean, everything became different. And then I got clean pretty fast though.
Yeah. So what happened? I mean, because what you didn't talk about in terms of the life change is depression. Wasn't depression a huge issue when you were drinking and doing drugs?
I don't know. Again, I have my doctorate. I'm a doctor, but I don't like to diagnose things. And I also think that there's a lot of power in words, in labels.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, I'm real not into labels, except
right.
for GMOs.
Right.
But you know, when people label people, I mean, I even had a difficulty with the word alcoholic,
right.
And so did my friends.
Right.
And I said, like I remember my friend Steve, he says, you know, I'm so happy and proud for you because he started to notice the changes.
Yeah.
He says, God, you've really changed more than anyone I've ever met.
Yeah.
He goes, I can't believe the new shoe.
Yeah.
He goes, but I have a problem with the word alcoholic. And I said, so you're telling me I've become... transform and is a great guy, but I call myself an alcoholic. If I call myself, you know, microphone.
Right.
And it got me to there.
Who cares?
Call yourself that.
Right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So it is a matter of semantics. It's a matter of the wording. Of what the words have such meaning and attachment.
Right.
So once I started not attaching certain meanings to depression or even illness of a cold or whatever it is, I move so fast through it that I end up not, that what manifests is great health. Is that's what I really keep. Those are the words I use, are great health, fitness,
right,
and so on, serenity. And these become part of me rather than focusing on the depression.
Right.
Obviously, I come from like a lot of stuff. I mean, I was kidnapped and molested. I was, you know, abused. Both parents still don't speak to me. I mean, no love, no support.
Right.
So all of those things could have made me into another word that I don't like, is victim.
Right.
And yet it's the opposite.
But you know, I have a question.
It's made me into somebody completely different.
I totally understand that and I agree with that.
Yeah.
But using words, I would almost argue that depression doesn't totally fall into that. I mean, for me, remembering how depressed I was helps keep me so grateful about what I'm doing today.
But isn't that also incomprehensibly demoralized? Is also a form of depression.
Yeah.
It's like miserable, pissed off, raging. These are all things that are all part of it. Isn't it all encompassing? So to take the one word,
word.
Are we having an argument now? We're going to have an argument?
I'm not afraid to throw it out.
I know you're not. I just met you and I can tell. I saw in your eyes how you're really, I could go on the funny shit, but you're going, oh man.
No, by the way.
I want to get into this conversation here.
No.
This is as bad as the microphones in the beginning. You were fighting me on
this
that.
This is our second fucking time. And look, you're bringing out my spirit side. But for me, the word depression has a lot of meaning. For me, that's like everything. Yes, there was anger. Yes, there was, you know, victimhood.
All of those things.
But that does help me to acknowledge, just because I remember like it was yesterday, not to use a cliche, but how depressed I was. And that's the big change for me.
Well, I'll take that.
Take it.
And I would venture to say, if you replaced, you know, that feeling with the presence, and the presence is to me, you know, 7 out of 12 steps deal with higher power. That's the one thing I got that a lot of people don't get that go to meetings that I hear sharing.
Right.
7 out of the 12 steps has something to do with a higher power and finding that. So to me, that's what it all became about.
Right.
So if I'm in that, if I'm in turning it over, I'm in the presence. I'm not in the back.
Right.
I'm not back there. Of course I remember what it's like. That's why you share at meetings, because you talk about what it was like so somebody can identify with it.
Right.
But for my own self,
you don't want to focus on that.
I'm definitely not focused. There's no question. I'm focusing on, you know, on turning this around. I mean,
right.
I have reminders all the time.
Right.
My parents are a reminder. My sister's a reminder all the time. Of alcoholism, of depression, of triangulation,
right,
of abuse,
of
narcissism, all of that is very present in my life. It's there.
Right.
But what else is there is transformation, change, positivity, prayer, meditation, serenity,
right,
all the promises coming true.
Right.
Intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me. It baffled me on how to handle what you call depression, or how to handle rage, or how to handle any of those things.
Right.
So if I'm all encompassing of all those things, I could be any of those things in any one day or any one moment.
Right.
Could
right.
be all of those things.
Right.
But now it's so replaced with things like laughter.
Right.
You can't laugh and be depressed in the same space.
Right.
They can't exist at the same time.
Right.
So which is a lot of my shift took place.
Right.
A literal shift into happiness, into fulfillment, into service. And so I start shifting those things. And then the other goes away anyway.
Right.
So it's not like I have to go, I was depressed or I was a rager or any of those things. I can acknowledge that they existed, but it's where am I today? And that's the most important thing is about today.
Totally. Absolutely.
So, and I'll tell you, I cannot believe how infinitely beautiful my life is today. I mean, it really is. And it was all foundationed in the program.
Right.
That's what did it.
Right.
You know, that's not what does it every day.
And what do you do in order to maintain this?
It's the maintenance.
Yeah.
You know, intuition, intuitively know how to handle situations. Intuition is only born out of repetition. So the repetition needs to take place of, of the prayer, the meditation, the service, the kindness, the spiritus, which is a Latin word for breath, you know, allowing the breath of a spirit in, you know, I call God, you know, with whatever. I say big G a lot of times. It's big G's coming. And I let the big G handle it.
Right.
And I am telling you, I've gotten out of, not out of, I've gotten into such more gratitude and a grace because of this turning over on a moment by moment basis,
right.
Not just
in
period
the morning or whatever. Yeah.
At all times. I could have, let's say I have a moment with you. We've had two conflicts already. Okay.
I thought we were having fun. Go on.
No. Okay. So what I can do with that, let's say it got really bad or escalated, which it still could. How much more time do we have?
Could. Yeah, I'm rooting for you.
I have the old me.
Right.
The old obstinate, righteous, stubborn, you know, guy.
Yeah.
Who's going to take you down.
Right.
Okay, to Chinatown.
Right.
Okay. Now there's that guy and he starts fighting.
Yeah.
He does start, he starts a little nudge, a little fight, you know. There's still that guy there.
Right.
I am still Craig Shoemaker. I'm still that. But what happens is the second I allow the breath of the big G to take over, then I realize how unimportant it is,
right.
How okay it is. And then your energy changes, my energy changes.
Absolutely.
I shift and then you shift.
Right.
Both of us, when we're about to have a conflict, we both smile, we both laugh. That comes into it now.
Right.
So living my life like that, instead of escalating and taking it to the point of physical or run out of the room or I hate that or go gossip about you know, the experience.
Right.
Now I have these experiences which are all, you know, go to another level. You know,
well, and it's like the pause when agitated kind of.
Yes, exactly. It's in the big book, but I just do it a little different way. I talk about spiritus, Latin word for breath, and it's the breath.
Right.
It's the breath of this higher source, and it's a source energy that takes over everything.
Right.
And then the divine comes in instead of my own self will run riot.
Right.
That's what comes in.
Well, also, for me, I'm relating. So don't you even begin to think I'm arguing.
no, argue with me.
But, like, it's also the realization, you know, for many years in sobriety, I thought winning was winning. And then I was like, oh, winning an argument is losing. Because I'm the one who ends up angry afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm the one who's, like, almost in tears.
Yeah.
I'm the one who has this person dislike me.
Yeah.
You know, and that realization that, that, you know, it's like, oh, that would you rather be or happy business. It's like,
absolutely.
I would rather, I used to think, oh, I'd rather be right. No, let them win.
How are you going to retrain that? The only way you're going to retrain it is a higher source.
Right.
Right.
That's
the only way to retrain that particular aspect of you.
Right.
And then the other one is, and I talk about this in my book, I have a book coming out. It's called Grace Book.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell
when
you
is
what
that coming
it, I'll tell you what it is. It's a book. I've become a big energy guy where I respond to energies now. Because I'm present enough to do it and mindful enough to do it. This is how I don't react anymore with those quick reactions.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say I don't do it anymore. I do it a lot less, and I get to the serenity faster now because of reprogramming. That's what the program is. You're reprogramming a system that is off.
Right.
You know, they would have sold my computer a long time ago for scrap and not gotten much for it. But I talk in the book about an experience that I had with my ex-wife, who, by the way, is the one that took me to my first meeting.
So that 13, that creative 13 step worked out.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you how it worked out. I was, she was, you know, we're both young, new to LA actors and actresses and stuff. And she and her friend, we were at a party. And we just started dating and sleeping together, whatever. And I said, get you beer? And they both went, no, we don't drink.
Right.
And I literally did not know what that meant.
Yeah.
That just did not respond with, I was way off and I went, what do you mean you don't drink? You're on solids? I mean, what does that mean you don't drink? I'm going to go get you a drink.
Right.
And they go, no, we don't drink alcohol. We're alcoholics. And that is another thing. It's two hot actresses were not Mr. Plunkett, who I always thought was the alcoholic with a big bulbous red nose with the exploding corpuscles or whatever. That's a drunk with a brown bag. That's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we go to AA. And I'm like, what the hell? And then I drank their beers for them, by the way.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Let me show you. You know, so that's how I was like. And then he took me to my first meeting, which was a very powerful moment in my life. That was the you know, one of the top moments of my life, because that's when everything changed. Even though I went out again.
Right.
That's
heard
when
stuff.
There. That's when, oh, but no, oh, that's the day that I knew it. I never thought it until I said it and acknowledged those words. Hi, I'm Craig, I'm an alcoholic, which you had to do because they went around the room on Hollywood and Gardner
Monday night.
And I went, and I said it for the first time. I was sweating. I mean, the sweat that was coming off me. No stage could have ever caused this.
Right,
I mean, it really was incredible how just saying those words.
Right.
And I remember being so self-obsessed, going, I hope I say it right. You know, as if anybody there really said, well, the way you said it that night was, you know, 25, 26 years ago. It was unbelievable. But anyway, it all shifted that night. So she dumped me because I was a newcomer. Then we dated again, dumped me because of whatever. And then I ran into her one night at a meeting 15 years ago. And then we conceived our child that night.
Wow.
And I married her. And then I realized at that time, it was sort of typical for me, is I see red flags and paint them green. And I'm one of
paint
these,
them white.
I'm one of these rescue guys. I'm a real rescuer.
Yeah.
But it started with, I try to fix my mom up with guys all the time.
Right.
I have a great story about that.
I've heard you say that. Yeah. Like, and you would write letters to famous athletes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got, actually one finally returned, Tim McCarver, the catcher for the Phillies.
But
you should meet my mom.
He didn't go out with her.
He didn't go out with her, but listen, there was a payoff. I told his partner, now this is 40 years later, I told his partner, Joe Buck, is on Fox Sports.
Yeah.
I said, I told him a story. I wanted this guy, you know, to have catches with me, and I had the whole illusion.
Right.
And he wrote me, finally wrote me. He wrote me a ball. He signed a ball. He's a famous catcher and broadcaster, and it says, "Dear son, time to grow up.
Love Dad,
aka Tim McCarver."
Right.
Which leads to the title of my other book called God's a Slow Motherfucker. There I cursed. Because it does. It takes time. That's how the divine works, is it does take time. And I want to do things now. I wanted to be married then, and I wanted to have a kid then, and I wanted it now.
Right.
And that's Craig. That's the alcoholic. I want it now.
That.
And then I want more.
Yeah.
And I want more. And so what happened was, about 8 years ago now, you know, separated. This was not going to happen. There was no way we should have been together. And it was really tough. And she put me through literally the worst days of my life, way worse than my drunken days.
The divorce, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Put me through, and now my now wife, through a hell that I could never even express to you.
Really?
Accusing me of molesting my kids.
Oh, God.
I mean, everything. She's got terrible issues, you know, like borderline personality disorder.
Right.
And it manifests in a way like this victim, and draws other people into the whole fold, and now it becomes this drama, and drama heavy, and courts. It cost me $1 million for my kids, and I had one mantra the entire time. And this includes bringing my now wife into my life. I said, I want people to know who I really am, not who they dictate me to be. And that became a mantra. It was a really wonderful mantra that I'd never heard anywhere.
Right.
But that's the one that kept me, and it drew in the most amazing person of my life is my wife today.
Right.
I mean, every moment of every day, I love her.
Right.
And it's every second of every day. But I mean, it's amazing to live like that. I never dreamt that up.
Right.
Never could have thought that. And that only happened because I drew in somebody through a source, or a higher source, and not through my own head and thinking, and it needs to be like this.
Right.
She needs to look like this.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I drew in this, what was meant to be was, I want someone to just see me for, and now guess what? I ended up with my kids now. You know, she tried to take them away and would have had me in prison and everything else. But here's what I was talking about with surrender, was one day we're going to court, and we go to court, and this one was over restraining orders, because I had restraining orders against her and her two brothers threatening my life.
God.
It was that ugly. They were threatening my life because these brothers believed that I was molesting these kids.
But they didn't know their sister was, or whatever. They
No. Of course they don't. That's how people are, especially with borderlines. Borderlines suck you in, just like she sucked me in.
Yeah.
They're geniuses
at
convincing people that they're these wonderful people. But if you ever look at their real track record,
like
the stuff on paper, it's like, wait a minute, no job, no career, no education, no nothing.
Right.
Wait a minute, you're a failure, and you're accusing this guy.
Right.
Nobody looks at it like that. They just look at, oh, the innocent damsel in distress, and they put it out. They're going to rescue her, too.
If they're part of the dysfunction, yeah.
But of course they are, just like I was.
Right.
And of course they're going to go for this.
Right.
I went for that, what she said about her ex before me.
Right.
I'm like, that creep, I wanted to kill him. So it ends up in court. And the one big drunk brother comes out from New England, and big red faced, 400 pounder. He starts lying about me on the stand. Right. And I went like this. I went like that. And the judge reamed me. He goes, "You do that in my court again, you are out of here." And I went, "Whoa, that didn't go well."
Right.
That, by the way, means I'm righteous.
Right.
That was me being righteous.
Right.
Again, I got to look for the messages that I'm getting from a higher source.
Right.
I go the next day, and he goes, "You're coming back the next day, all of you." Oh boy, that didn't go well.
Right, right, right.
Out of control, you know. And I. By the way, my lawyer is a friend of mine who's sober about 5 years more than me. We've been friends for all these years. Little did I know, our friendship would lead to her being my divorce lawyer.
Right.
So I go and I said, "I'm doing a commercial. I had to shoot this. Thank God I ended on time." And then the epiphany happened. I called her up and I said, "We're issuing mutual apologies before the court. We're out of here. I'm doing this for my children." She goes, "I'll run it by them." I get to the courthouse. There they are writing their apologies. And I'll make a long story short. She says, I hand her mine. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote more because it flowed mm-hmm. through me. Mm-hmm. And it was zero put responsibility or accountability on them. It was all on me. It was full accountability. This was major step work.
Right.
They talk about, in the big book, they talk about your part in something when you're doing your fourth step. By the way, your part isn't dismissed. That's what a lot of us, and I thought this before, we're 100% responsible. Not partly. You're
right.
100% responsible for the resentment.
Right, right.
You're 100%. And that was a part I didn't understand.
Yeah, that's interesting. And
because people go, "Oh, what about if you're raped and all that?" No, you're 100% responsible for that resentment. And that's what had to be done in this amends that I made. I saw 13 pages handwritten. She grabs it and she goes, "You see the world through rose-colored glasses. That's not how the court system works." I said, "You know what? You don't know what it's like living like this. I'm done. I'm done, Susan. Take this." She goes, "I'll read it, and then I'm done." And I quit. She goes, "It doesn't work like this," because she had done all this work on me winning and winning.
Right, right, right.
It's not winning because I was miserable and upset
right.
and just caught in this bad paradigm.
Yeah.
She goes in. I swear this is true. She starts reading the letter, and it's a closed courtroom. You see a tear jumps onto the paper. She starts crying. I'm shaking, crying. I look over my ex. She's crying. Her brother's crying. The bailiff is crying. The stenographer.
She's reading out loud?
Yeah, she's reading my apology letter, 13 pages out loud for the judge.
Right.
He starts crying, the judge. So because a healing was taking place, and this was only God that could be doing this,
right.
not me. I had nothing to do with this. Who comes up with a stupid solution like that? I'm going to write apologies.
Right.
That's not a human response.
Right.
That's only... So guess what happens? So they do their cursory apology. They did one of those AA things. "If you feel I did this, I'm sorry,"
right.
which I hate.
Right,
that's
right.
not taking responsibility. It didn't matter at that point. The
right.
judge goes, "Wow. I've never seen like this in all my days on the bench and as a lawyer. Never seen it. Thank you so much for the courage." And he goes, "Now turn to your lawyers, give them a hug, and thank them for the courage it took to do this." I'm thinking, yeah, she's quitting a couple minutes ago. But
right.
everyone's bawling. The assistant lawyer's crying. And what took place was a surrender. And that's the day where I really got on another level of what surrender really means. It's you're surrendering old ideas.
Right.
You're surrendering winning it the way you think winning is.
Right.
And guess who won?
Right.
Anyway,
yeah,
I did,
you did of course.
From this surrender.
Right.
Not only did I get technically, I mean, the technical stuff of more time with the kids and now, you know, I'm in charge and all that kind of stuff. Not only did I get that, but I got the serenity and I got the children to finally open up to who I really am because she was trying to bombard them with this information on who she said that I was and everyone else. And you know what I have today? I have happiness, peace, serenity, a marriage that's fully love.
Right.
It's full love, and that's divine as well. So that's what happens with, that's my surrender story, one of them.
I really understand that.
And yeah,
I think
do you?
Yes, and I think it's really, really well said, because and I also think that when the heart surrenders, or whatever you want to call it, the results don't even really matter anymore, because
right.
you feel different.
Exactly, and they're not the results you ever can paint anyway.
Right, right. I mean, it's like that, well, there is that story that always affected me, and it's in the beginning of the big book, of like the guy who cheated his partner, and then he was sober, and he, it's like he didn't know what to, how he, if he went mm-hmm.
and confessed what he had done, how he had, like, you know, he'd screwed over his partner and then badmouthed the partner. Mm-hmm. And how could he do this? Because if he went to jail, he wouldn't be able to provide for his family. And he talked it over with his sponsor. They don't use the word sponsor in the big book, but whatever. Right. And then you know, he decided that he couldn't live like that. So it didn't really matter if he went to jail. He would have to do that. And, of course, it all worked out. But, like, my other thing that I was thinking, too, is I know I don't change until I'm in so much pain that changing is less painful than living away. So it's like all the hell you went through with that relationship is what made you find the partner that you have today, because it made you see, like,
and appreciate on a daily basis.
That. Well, and that's what I was talking about with depression.
I understand heaven now because I've been to hell.
Right.
And I understand it and embrace it and continue to do the things it takes to stay there. Right. You know, every night, me, my children, I now have three children, I have one with her and two with the ex, and now one on the way, a girl on the way.
Congratulations.
Every night, no matter how old they are, that we eat together, we do a gratitude list. And it centers us in a new pattern of living, of which I do not come from. I come from still feeling like I'm going to get evicted. Still have abandonment stuff, you know. Oh my God, they're leaving me. Still have all of those things that they don't go away completely.
Right.
And that's what I think you're talking about with the depression. They don't go away completely. But what does happen is it dissipates. Hey, Joel.
How's it going?
Hey,
this
Joel.
Is Anna.
Hey.
Hi.
We're doing a podcast.
You're on my podcast. Oh, congratulations.
Sorry. I can be quiet.
I know we're going long.
Oh my God!
I know you know you talk, Craig.
I do for a living.
I just sit here and listen.
Promote my shows. They can go see what it's like to be clear-headed, and what manifests is more enriched creativity.
Yeah.
Because there's more, you're more in touch with the creator, and that's who's coming up with this stuff, and it's never been better. To the point where I do talk too much. I do an hour and a half on stage at least.
Right.
I do long shows.
Well, so how can people find you? Where? So you have...
CraigShoemaker.com.
Yeah.
Spelled Shoemaker. No,
yeah.
No Macher. I'm not... No umlaut.
Right.
I'm off the boat from Bavaria.
Right.
Oh, Macher. Everybody tries to make me a mom. Just a little maker.
Right. Just maker.
And then CraigShoemakerShow.com is our podcast where we actually take people through guided lapidation. To get through any obstacle, and we continue to have obstacles, and this allows the breath of spirit in you instead of your mind taking over. We engage your body and your spirit when we do the lapidation, when you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's also being engaged. It's not just up in your head anymore,
mm-hmm.
which is where depression lies, which is where thoughts about depression lie.
Mm-hmm.
It all lies in your head. So to break through and initiate a healing, we do these guided lapidations, and our show is a lot about getting through whatever you're going through.
Right.
You know, it could be Crohn's disease.
Right,
you
right.
know, which I don't have anymore.
So, okay, but so that show, like, so you have two podcasts?
No, I have one called CraigShoemakerShow.com. It's called Laugh It Off.
Yes. And that's with the two co-hosts.
Yes. Well, they're Joel just walked in, and Sarah's a co-host.
Right.
And we've got a great chemistry now.
Yes.
Because we're all at different points in our life, and all different spaces and paths and ages. And I think, you know, they're single and young and, you know, still fresh in the business. And you know, I'm the grizzly old veteran with the wisdom and so
forth.
Right. And then I'm also seeing clients now, too. I do, you know, I have my doctorate and I'm seeing clients, individual clients. I do energy work with them, and which is another thing that's happened in sobriety. Once you clear the mechanism, so much more can be delivered. And things you couldn't have written, I couldn't have written this stuff out.
So you have a PhD in...
Humanities, but I did a lot of work in this, in the world of, you know, psychic energy work. And I can feel things and see things in people that they... might be blocked from seeing.
What are you seeing and feeling in me? Sorry, I'm a narcissist.
Are you?
No.
That's what I see. No, I don't. No. You really want me to do a reading? I could do a reading for you.
Well, no, I don't know, do I? I feel pretty clear these days.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you're sensing just how great I'm doing.
Well, you're already answering.
No.
But what I'm saying is, okay, I'll give you the quick reading on what just took place.
Okay.
okay?
Okay.
You kind of don't want to be red because you don't want to explore certain little territories that you kind of put away for a little bit. You put them in a compartment. And you'd much rather live in the I'm really happy world than possibly be out of control and listen to what I might have to say in the way of there could be some other things to explore. There could be, this is territory.
Yeah, it's possible.
Even doing energy work, the way that I work, most people don't even know what that is, and they're afraid of it.
Right.
So there's a little tentative feeling in your asking as well.
Well, but I mean, I live in LA, so I've been to like a bunch of healers and stuff like that. Like I went to the cranial sacral therapy.
Right.
That was the closest I came to energy work.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I also feel like, you know, I'm in therapy every week. Like, it's been a lot of years and work getting to this happy place.
Right.
And so, like, let's not fuck with it right now. Since,
there you go.
Since,
that's,
like,
that's exactly what I was reading.
But really, all I want when I say, tell me what you see in me, is to hear good things.
Exactly.
You know?
That's part of what I'm saying. It's scary. It's scary to first of all be revealed, and there's
especially
thousands of people listening.
All my millions of listeners. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
So there's that. There's right. that element as well. So we could set up a private session, and I will go
devastate
deeper.
Me with
I
like,
will go
what's
deeper.
Really wrong that I don't know about.
It's not wrong.
No.
It's not wrong. It's really a lot of it is what's right and needs to be. As you were talking about the word depression, it's a lot of it's about acknowledging.
Yeah.
It's just acknowledgement. Of where you are, where you can go, the possibilities. You know, I live in possibility now.
Right.
And I don't live in the other way of it's going to be taken away. I mean, I had a lot of that.
Right.
And in my hope message is the possibilities have come true.
Right.
And not in ways, you know, I couldn't have written this.
Yeah.
I couldn't have written this out if you gave me like a stack of pens and unlimited paper in a cabin like Thoreau.
Right.
I couldn't have come up with how wonderful and enriched this life is now.
Right.
And that doesn't mean I made more money in the 90s.
Right.
But I've always made really good money.
Right.
But that's only happened through being sober and being clear and being present and changing and listening.
Right.
And heeding what people say. And sometimes I resist right away, you know, the immediate resistance. But I remember even creatively, a guy said to me, the industry says you need a better point of view. And what do you mean? I started doing my, I can argue with anyone. You know?
I don't
what do you mean
that.
The industry?
Yeah.
What is it, some big amoeba? Do they all have one big meeting? There's thousands of people. The whole industry got together and said, Craig Shoemaker needs a new idea.
Yeah.
Exactly. He needs an identity. And I argue with the guy. And that was the moment, though, that I might have argued with him, but a change was initiated.
Right.
It took place. And that was the moment where I said, why don't you get your identity and make it clear? And by the way, I was really on top of my comedy game at the time for laughs,
right,
but not for the really good stuff. So since that point, I put my sobriety into my work, and that is I share only myself and my experience, not my opinion. And I learned that from AA, by the way.
Right.
So if you watch my show, you hear these stories and stories and stories. Of course, there's exaggeration, comedic exaggeration,
right,
but the kernel of it is true.
Right.
And only the truth can really make you laugh.
Right.
There's some
right,
identification
right.
of truth
right.
in you. Either I felt like that, I never want to feel like that again, whatever it is. That's with a comedian, if that's what they're doing, and you're responding to it, there's some identification of honesty and integrity and true self and authentic self that is being exposed if a comedian's really good. And I think, I know that comedically I've never been better. And
right.
that podcast, too, is we're really getting it. Now I have other people involved in that, so it's not a monologue.
Right.
And they're getting the chemistry as well. And we're just having a blast. And our numbers have gone up with us.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
As we develop.
So, okay, so if people wanted to have a session with you, how would they do that?
Just
they
go to CraigShoemaker.com. No, I'm starting to do Skype.
Oh,
I can feel it over Skype. I just did a client over Skype because
okay.
she travels a lot. And I see things in people that they're blocked from.
Right.
And I always ask for permission to
right.
go there. Because,
right.
And if they say no, then that's fine.
Right.
They're just not ready at
right.
the time. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you're ready when you're ready. It's just like when you get sober.
Right.
It's like, you know, who knew? I mean, I died one time from an overdose. Died. Hovered over my body in Jamaica. The work. It didn't stop me. It wasn't my bottom.
Right, what were you
that
on?
That was not my bottom. I was on, as a matter of fact, when I went down, I'll never forget the words. I was like, I was hovering over, and the guy goes, "Hey, man, pasty man, did too much mushroom tea."
You overdose on mushroom tea?
Mushroom tea, ganja cake, red stripe beer, cocaine, meth, and a whole combination. I did that night, and I went down, and I was done. And I actually thought that I would never leave that island. When they revived me, there was a nurse. They revived me, and I never thought I'd leave the island again. I thought it was going to be one of those burnout guys in a trench coat that comes up to you and says, the inside of an electric generator looks like the Roman numeral 21. I mean, I thought I'd be one of those guys. Oh, my God, run, 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 it's him.
Right.
And I really had that conscious thought.
Right.
It was the devil and God arguing when I was spinning.
Right.
They were going, come with me. No, you're mine. It was so spooky, and it still wasn't my bottom. It was for a couple days I stopped. But no, went right back. And,
well, that's
the
thing. I mean, I think that's, that's the misconception people have.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, it has to be. They're like, what happened?
Yeah.
Did you change? I was like, oh, I wanted to kill myself every day for like a year. That's what happened.
And then one day you didn't.
Yeah.
You know, one day you didn't. And you still might want again, but now you got tools to deal with that.
Right.
Those impulses or those feelings.
Right, right.
Yeah. Now, why did you want to kill yourself?
Well,
you just have a self-esteem thing?
Well, I think that, I mean, I you know, depression's in my family, so I was like always a little bit, I was always depressed, and then I was self-medicating with cocaine and alcohol and Ambien, not realizing that I'm actually incredibly sensitive to chemicals, and if you put a stimulant and a depressant in a totally depressed person, that's just going to drive you down and down and down.
Right.
And I thought cocaine was my answer. I had convinced myself that that was the good thing in my life.
Right.
And so then I would say, well, this, I kind of consciously knew this is killing me, and yet it's the most important thing in my life, so I can't stop it. So what do I could only die. That's the only answer. And I had no, I mean, I went to rehab sort of thinking this might be better than killing myself. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. I doubt it.
Right.
But I'll, but I can't do it the other way.
And where did you grow up?
Marin County, up north.
Oh, from Marin. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And you came to LA.
I heard a judgment in your voice. I'm not even going to explore it.
There was not.
Marin.
See, you cannot do energy work because I had no judgment in my voice. The only judgment was I predicted the wrong place.
What did you own?
That's what you felt.
Oh, you New York?
I did. I had a East Coast at least.
Right. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, I didn't have Marin.
Okay.
So that's what you felt.
Okay,
so
interesting.
You do not get into the energy work business.
So you're saying that I'm close to energy work because I was correct in noticing a thought.
You did see a little bit of a disconnect in me in there because I went, oh,
yeah,
wrong, yeah. Energy boy.
I went to college in Connecticut, and I've lived in New York a couple times.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
There you go. So it's back.
It's
all right.
It's back. You haven't lost your gift.
I haven't lost it.
But, yeah. So, okay, wait. We have a couple things to do, and then you have, like, real work to do. Okay. We play a game.
Okay.
On this podcast.
Yeah.
It's sort of a game. It's basically I make the guest guess which was not an episode of My Strange Addiction. Do you know that show?
No.
Okay, My Strange Addiction is a television
show. I don't know anything.
Show.
I watch Duck Dynasty.
You don't need to know
it's my favorite. Ask me about Uncle Si. I can tell you anything. Okay, go ahead.
I would be ill-equipped to do that. But, but okay, so My Strange Addiction was this show that may still be on, but basically they just had people with insane addictions.
Okay.
And it really kind of...
I like that.
Yeah, okay, so... Just know that that's the premise of the show.
Got it.
And now I'm going to give you three scenarios, and you have to guess which was not an episode of My Strange Addiction.
Okay, got it.
See, you don't have to... I've never seen the show, and I can play this game.
I'll buzz in.
Okay. Number one, the woman who chews on electric cords, who's addicted to chewing on electric cords.
Okay.
Number two, the woman who's addicted to eating drywall.
Okay.
And number three, the woman who lives as an... who's addicted to living as an adult baby.
Okay, it's for sure the first one is legit. And lives as an adult baby?
Yeah.
I'll go drywall.
Nobody ever gets this because I create good... Electric cords was the made-up one.
No!
Yes, that's why this is a good game.
That makes you that great of a writer. I was the one where I went, I've chewed electric cords.
Right, I know, that's...
I didn't have to go to a meeting for it, but, you know.
But that's the skill of the question writer.
Excellent.
Is that you have to write one that sounds more realistic than the ones that they have. Because what they have is so outrageous.
I was actually trying to do something different, too. As I was playing the game of, I'm going to see...
My facial reaction?
No, the way you delivered the question. Like, the last one I knew for sure...
Was real.
Well, because yeah, you delivered it. You delivered it.
Whatever
like,
you did didn't work. I hate to point out
that's
the
true.
Obvious.
That's true.
So, but I mean, bring
but it was
into
down to
process.
The drywall in the first one though, because okay. the last one you delivered like this. I'm just telling you, for the next person you do it to, you went like this is the one that's real, but the first ones are really clever.
Well, I do. Okay.
So next time you deliver the third one on the microphone and that we start off the show with advice. I gave you advice to get two microphones.
I'm gonna do it.
This went well, by the way, with no microphone.
How do you know?
I don't know if it got picked up or not, but
ye have little faith. I told you.
Okay, I've got.
But I'm gonna still take your advice. Okay, and so then I asked for a question from Twitter about addiction. So we got a couple options. We're gonna pick.
Okay.
One of them.
Got it.
Okay. One at Rudy Hoffman 6H asked, "How should I react to an addict friend who went through my stuff and stole my prescription drugs?" That's question one. You're gonna pick one or the other. And then at Timothy Patrick, Patrick with the C, N-H, he asked, "Can a one-night addiction breakdown send you into a tailspin?" And then I asked him to clarify, and he said, "I mean, a former alcoholic has a few drinks at a bar. Can one night send them into a tailspin? Which do you want?"
I guess I'll take the... I'm going to take the second one for a reason.
Okay.
Because I don't like to talk to people about prescription drugs because I have too many opinions.
Okay, good. Let's leave that alone. You know, there are only so many hours in the day.
But exactly. And people who like prescription drugs don't like my opinion on trying alternatives.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
I'm
right.
Like, every alternative is what my perspective is. And I also have the perspective of that you can talk any doctor into giving you a prescription. I know that to be true.
Oh, of course.
Because I've done it.
Yeah.
So anyway, not to say that there aren't people that need them, but there are some that don't, to convince themselves that they do. So that's the answer to the first one. Now, the second one was the tailspin.
Yeah, it was basically like one night, like what I talked about, you know.
Yeah.
Or no, I mean, he's talking about something, like he's saying like, If a sober person goes and drinks one night, can that send them into a tailspin?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now you're out again, and you'd be in a, I'll tell you the tailspin I went into. You start remembering the people that are in the program with you.
Right.
You could. I couldn't drink them away.
Well, that's
each drink
say.
That I would try, and every snort of
their
cocaine.
Faces.
I'm, oh my God! There's Sammy. Oh, he handed me his card and said, "Call him whenever." And I'm not doing that. No, he's not going away. I was trying everything. No, I went into a major tailspin, of course, but there's always room for you to come back.
Right.
You know, there's always a seat, and there's no admission for this thing. There's just the admission that you're an alcoholic. That's your only cover charge.
Yeah.
And that's it. And call yourself an alcoholic. If you're a drug addict, call yourself an alcoholic anyway. What the hell?
Exactly. That was my thing.
It doesn't matter what you call yourself. It just matters that you get this program. The way it's written is infallible. It doesn't have any... There's no mistakes in it.
Right.
Believe me, I've tried. It's fully vetted by many people who have tried to prove this thing wrong.
Right.
But it's principles before personalities.
And the principles
of the program are absolutely perfect. Anything you're going to come up with that's not, it has to do with a personality that you know from a meeting and they're ego-driven or whatever it is and they just don't get it and they get it on the way they want to get it.
Right.
But the way it's written... It doesn't have any loopholes.
Right.
There's no holes. There's nothing except for absolute perfection. It was written by, you know, a higher source, basically.
Right.
You know.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good note to end on.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Craig, thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna.
What
it was
a
my pleasure. Thank you.
Now we get to fight with the...